We were at a dinner a couple of nights ago, and once again the conversation, dinner table conversation, was on the war between Russia and Ukraine. And it went on and on. Everyone had their views and perspectives. And so, as usual, they said, "What are your views?" Everyone has asked their views. So I said, "There are enough views floating around, but let's talk about our wars. Our personal wars and our personal conflicts." And immediately the shutter came down. Our battles, our wars, our conflicts with others, and more importantly, with ourselves. People don't like talking about that. Because if everyone hypothetically was at peace, could there be an external war? The Satyug, which is the age of truth, would mean this only: everyone is at peace. I remember when I was in my 20s and I had taken over the advertising business. Emails had just started at that time, email communication. And sometimes a client would write a mail accusing the agency of not working fast enough, or accusing a client servicing executive of not being good enough. And immediately my defenses would come up and a reply would go. And then I would regret it. And by, I realized that if there is a gap between receiving the email and my response, so I would keep the response in the drafts folder, save it in drafts, and then next day I would rework it and rework it. And I realized that my perspective kept changing. I became more and more objective. And so finally, when I sent the mail, it was no longer from a reactive position, a position of conflict. It was from an objective position. I realized I was removing all superlatives. That is the first thing I realized. Very, what you are saying is very wrong. Wrong. All these words started changing to incorrect. Perhaps you have not understood the intention, and so on and so forth. So, in other words, I realized that I was no longer at war with someone's communication. This was when I was 21, 22, 23. Because we are so quick to fire our missiles at others, that is the ego, that is the force of the ego, with its sense of doership, and so it blames others for being wrong. And I am right. So your entire artillery has come out. And by, I realized that even in speaking, it is the same thing. Where is our response coming from? Is it coming from a space of conflict and war with what the other person has said? Have we brought out all our guns, ammunition? Or do we understand that this person is also an aspect of God? Because God has conditioned this person right from the moment of birth. Now, I may not agree with what the person is saying, but surely the person is entitled to their point of view. Can I take that away from a person? It is their point of view. It is not my job to convince them. It is my job to put across my point of view in the least destructive way, because I'm no longer targeting an individual and blaming that individual and hating that individual. So I put across my point of view, and thereafter, whether that person agrees with me or not is God's will. So the war is over. The personal war is over. When you accept the foundation of this teaching, one, whatever happens is the will of God, and two, nobody is the doer of their actions. When that is accepted deep down, then all conflicts dissolve. The ego does not like it. A couple of times when someone was very agitated and expressive and was saying something, my response was, "You're entitled to say what you want, but don't forget that it's your point of view. It's not the truth." And the ego got even more agitated. "How dare you say that?" I said, "Because it is your point of view based on the way you see life, the way life has conditioned you, based on your genetics, based on your social background, economic background, religious background, on the basis of which you have said what you said. So it's your point of view. If you had received completely different conditioning, maybe your point of view might have been different. So that disarms people, you know, they get shocked sometimes. Invariably, they get more aggressive, but sometimes the penny drops. And so when we realize this, we find we are ourselves becoming less aggressive as far as our own point of view is concerned, because we know it is still only a point of view. We stop trying to force others to obey our command, to listen to us, because we are no longer invested in that. Our investments are elsewhere. I'm reminded of this story of Shirdi Sai Baba. I don't know the details and I tend to get details wrong. But one man came to meet Sai Baba, who was also a kind of spiritual teacher or something. And then he excused himself, might have had to go to the bathroom or what, I don't know. So quickly Sai Baba told his devotee that open his bag and pull out this book. It was a book on maybe Vishnu's teachings or Sahasranam or something. I don't know. Quickly pull it out, pull it out. So the devotee obeyed Baba's command. He hesitated. He said, but you know, I mean, it's like tantamount to stealing. He said, just pull it out. So he pulled it out and he said, Baba, now what? He said, now you keep holding it in your hand. So he said, but it doesn't look right. He said, do as I tell you. So he was holding it in his hand and the other man came back and exploded. How dare you open my bag and steal my book without my permission? And Sai Baba looked at him and said, you call yourself so and so. You can't even control your own reaction. How are others going to follow you? That was the reason Baba got that book pulled out. He said, you're abusing this man who's holding your book and he's wearing an orange robe. So we are too quick to judge. You are Rajat. Would you like to continue the conversation from last Sunday? Anything you'd like to share? The recording is going on, if you can take that.
Remember you told me that first of all, you're not your mind, like you're not what you're thinking. You told me something related to that. And it was like two or three nights ago where I realized something, that I was very partial with my awareness. Like I was being aware of my desires, of my fears, but I wasn't really aware of the one who was trying to change it. Like I was aware of only one world, of only one aspect of my thoughts. But when I realized that I need to be aware of both of them, like I need to be aware of my desires and fears as well, I need to be aware of the one who is trying to change, who is trying to bring about the change. Like at that point, you can say like something stopped, you can say something stopped. And it happened, I guess, on Friday night, I would say. Like I discovered something, like, to be honest, I feel like I need to be more aware of that, of the thoughts which you can say, which like I need to bring change in my life, I need to do this, I need to live that, I need to think this way and all that. So I realized that I don't have to become very partial with my awareness. Like I need to be non-judgmental, like no, I don't need to only think about this, but I need to be aware of both kind of thoughts, the good and the bad.
But that could be very hard work.
Yeah, it is. It's very, to be honest, like even right now, it's like I'm here, I'm there, I'm here, I'm that. It's like you can say I'm like kind of, you can say, practicing every moment, you can say, whenever I'm awake.
But is this giving you more peace or creating a disturbed mind?
It's just, you can say, bringing awareness that there is disturbance in my mind. Like from that night, if I see that there's some degree of nervousness or anxiety in me, I like, and suddenly it stops. Like I'm not looking for, it's not like I'm looking for peace anymore, because every time I look for peace, there's an anxiety in me. Like, oh no, I'm not getting it. What am I doing wrong? So as soon as I become aware of both of them, then you can say there's like nothingness, to be honest. Like there's neither peace but nor anxiety.
Beautiful.
I think it's working for me.
I know, we are so anxious when we are not at peace, and we are anxious about not being at peace.
That's
quite crazy, no? And in deep sleep, that one who is anxious disappears. So what is being sought is that one's absence. But who is going to seek that absence? The one who is present is trying to seek its own absence. It's like they say, you go to school and say in the roll call, I'm absent. Is it possible? So you had said that something happened in your life, a specific event, if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, which kind of moved you on to the spiritual path.
Right.
Would you like to share a bit about it?
Like it had something to do with my family. You can say like my parents, they don't really like share a good bond, and from childhood it always affected me. Now, like to be honest, like when I was very, very young, like I realized that I had very great coping mechanisms. Like I would go out, I would play with my friends and all that. So, like I used to postpone it, to be honest. Like my mind used to postpone it, like save all this pain, save all this suffering for later. But like in 2020, when like there was pandemic, like everyone was at home, and there was like no option to go out, meet people and all that. And my parents, they were at home. Like my father, he was a working person, right? So he lost his job. So like everyone was very agitated, and like it created like a very disturbing environment at home. Like there was things that went really wrong during that time. So from there, you can say it kind of you forced me to go this way.
That's when you started reading books and watching videos.
That's when I started reading books on spirituality and self and this line. Like before that, I used to read books, but mostly on like self-help or business finance. But after that, I started focusing on the spiritual side of it.
But if you started reading spiritual books at the age of 17, what age did you start reading the self-help books?
16 in 2019.
And how are things at home now between your parents? Are they now, has your father got a job?
He goes to job, and you can say he stays there, to be honest. Like he only comes like once a week, and my mother is also doing well. Like you can say she's really put herself into a lot of spiritual religious practices, to be honest. Not spiritual, but religious practices. Like she's a big devotee of Krishna, Lord Krishna. So she spends a lot of time on that. And my father, I would say like he has realized like things need to get better at home, so he's kind of putting it into practice and all that. Like all three of us, we are not trying in our own personal lives to bring about change, like to make peace at home, to make peace with ourselves.
That's nice. And you are studying?
I'm studying.
What are you doing?
At present, I'm a BCom student, second year. Like I will be promoted to third year in June. Other than that, I was also a, you can say like a spoken English trainer till yesterday, because my contract it ended yesterday. Now I'll be looking for more internships.
So, do you accept totally that the conflict between your parents was their destiny as well as yours? Do you accept that this had to happen as per the divine plan?
I sometimes feel a bit grateful about this as about it as a
Grateful because it moved you onto the path.
right. I sometimes feel grateful.
That's well said, because now I lost my father when I was 14, and in my 20s, I realized no matter how deep the personal loss, if that had not happened, I would have not been on this journey.
Like a blessing in disguise.
One could say, because you see, everyone's journey is the journey of loss in some form or another. The loss to find out who we truly are. So we may lose a relationship, we may lose wealth, we may lose an object. It is a journey of loss of some form or another. And so those who lose early are already looking at life from another dimension because they realize this thing, whatever it may be, is so brittle, fragile, it can go. So I cannot depend on it. So what is it that I can depend on? Something which is permanent, which does not depend on an object, the object being a person, a material object, whatever it may be. That is the journey, the inner journey, the journey of discovering that which cannot be lost. And as life goes by, we all experience different kinds of loss. Loss of a job is a loss. A beautiful object you paid a lot of money for is destroyed, it's a loss. So while the natural reaction would be to mope and cry and blame God for the loss, what did I do wrong? Why are you punishing me like this, and so on and so forth? The lucky ones get to realize this is the design of life. There are no guarantees. And then, as you rightly said, a sense of gratefulness arises. One is grateful because without that loss, we would not have seen life for what it is. But we are so afraid to lose that we clutch and hold on to things tightly and create hell for others as well as ourselves. I remember one saying which deeply impacted me in my 20s. I saw it at a friend's house in his bathroom. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back, it's yours. If it doesn't, it never was. Set it free from all your judgments, opinions, views, and accept it unconditionally. You are the only child. So are you immersed in all these books and videos, or do you also go out and have some fun? Little bit of fun.
I also go.
You
out
do. Left. That's I very do. Important.
I do.
Yesterday I met someone who is very high up in society. She has very rich friends. She herself is very rich. But her lifestyle has changed because she is immersed in Ayurveda, yoga and all that. So she likes to have an early dinner, 7:30 or so. And she realized that her friends, they would say, yes, yes, let's meet early. But they'd say, oh, traffic, we are coming late. And we would keep pushing the time, arrive late, then have a drink and expect that she would be her old self and go along with it. So she realized that her priorities changed. Now, what happens to the friends? Will they accept her in her new avatar or not? That is the fear. It takes courage, no? Because you depend on your social circle. And so now she changed her approach. She no longer says, let's meet for an early dinner. She says, I will meet you after my dinner, which is your dinner time, and join you for a drink. But some people don't even like that because you're not conforming to what their idea of an evening out should be. That tends to happen on the spiritual journey. You might find that there are some friends you enjoy being with more than others. And you might find that certain bonds or relationships don't go any further than what they are currently. It does happen. A lot of people face these challenges when they're on the spiritual journey. They kind of need to adapt to a new dynamic in society. And they start losing their dependence on these social relationships, which is a good sign. So as long as the quest is for peace and you channel your spiritual energies towards that, it has direction. Because I remember in my first talk I ever gave in Pune, there was a man about 60 who had tried everything. Reiki, pranic healing, this kriya, that kriya. And he asked me, what next? And I said, where will this end? But do you know what it is you are looking for through all these practices? He said, no. I said, then you'll keep looking. If I don't know I'm looking for a pearl, I'll keep looking because I don't know what I'm looking for. If I know I'm looking for a pearl, my focus is on the pearl. So I told him, I said, in your mind, go back and review what all you did. Did any of them give you more peace than the others? And if you get your answer, go back to that. And if not, keep looking, but now with this direction, where's my peace to be found? And he was so grateful because he said, this didn't even strike me. That is why my teacher would say this. When he asked me, what am I looking for? I said, I have no idea I was even looking. So he told me, he said, whether you know it or not, you are looking for peace of mind. Whether you know it or not. Because you see, the ego is so lost in this journey. So your mother supports you when you tell her, like, I'm going to so-and-so place, or she's wondering what's wrong with my son.
She sometimes kind of like, she's a bit skeptical about my about my teachings and all that, because what she is into, it's like totally religious. And I'm a bit away from that. I sometimes, even when I get a bit angry, I like condemn it, like, but I avoid it now. Like, whatever you do, just keep me away from it. And whatever I'll do, I won't share anything with you, because it always like leads to an argument. But like, my mother's like, this is true, this is not, this is true, this I you can I like keep it away from her.
Good.
It's better than arguing.
I agree completely. As long as nobody gets in each other's way.
Right.
So y'all don't get in each other's way.
I tell her not, but sometimes some like she still wants me to be religious, but I tell her like, don't pull me.
It reminds me of a friend and his elder sister. Friend is in his 60s. So the elder sister goes to a guru's ashram. She comes from abroad. She lives abroad, goes to a guru's ashram. So every time they have an argument, he says, you'll go running there. Peace is not to be found there. She says, what do you mean? So you know how siblings can push each other's buttons, which is what they do all the time. He said, because you're arguing all the time, so why you want to go running there? Peace is to be found here. So I told him, don't do that. She is on her journey. Let her go. Let her be. Don't try to tell her, don't go to the ashram, don't do this. That's not right. People have to be left to their destinies. We should not get in their way. Don't try to discourage someone from whatever they are. Even if they haven't found their peace, they will find it when they are meant to find it. Okay, if she asks you your view, what do you feel? I'm going to so and so place. What are your thoughts? Then by all means, share it. But don't try to thrust your views on others. I've seen it happen so many times, and it's really sad, especially when it comes to certain disciples of certain gurus. I know someone who visited a friend's house, saw photos on the walls, and said, ha, remove all these from here immediately. These are all distractions, and they're at a lower level. You should have only one photo. You can guess whose photo? His guru's photo. How can you do that? That means you know better than God what is the best for that person. So we tend to get in the way of people's journeys, you know. That is what we do. But coming to Krishna, bhakti, if we see God in everyone, isn't that bhakti? Now, don't tell your mom that, because she has to understand it her way. But one thing is worshipping Krishna or any form of bhakti, and the other is living it. Because if one's life is full of conflict, one's relationships are full of conflict, but one is immersed in bhakti worship, there is a disconnect. Because whatever one is immersed in must permeate daily living. So if someone tells me, do I worship Krishna? I would say yes. Though I don't worship the form of Krishna, but I worship Krishna. If I see Krishna in everyone, I'm worshipping Krishna, especially in those I don't like. Yes, Vanaja, how are you? Seeing you after 2.5 years. It's okay. This is your first time?
Recently, I do usually watch your videos, but I never visited here because I started following you since pandemic. So,
You're Bombay, from Bombay.
yeah.
What's your name?
Radhika.
Radhika. You all look the same age. How old are you?
24.
24. And what do you do?
I've studied masters in clinical psychology.
Master's in clinical psychology. Oh, how interesting.
But yeah, like having some issues myself.
Sure.
But I would say that, like, even after doing masters, the issues did exist. Like, and there was pandemic and like personal issues as well and familial issues as well. But so I wouldn't say that I have fully ingrained the teachings in me. There's still a process that is going on and off, on and off, on and off. And so since pandemic, when I started looking at this aspect and I started reading Sai Satcharit, before that, like, my family's religious enough, or we are all ardent devotees of Baba, but I never read Sai Satcharit. So I'm a devotee of Swami and Sai, like I follow them. But still I realize that, as you just said, that worshipping and then permeating those teachings in like in living is kind of difficult. So most of the times, like last year, I was more grounded, I would say. But sometimes as life goes ahead, I realize that there's an on and off going on. Like I feel peace in meditation, like sitting and, but then I force myself to, you know, every time to have that peace whenever I sit. So recently when I try to sit for meditation, I'm not able to concentrate, or I am like, there's an ache in my knee or thigh, because I started with a job and it's a sedentary job. So kind of it becomes difficult for my body to, you know, fix me in that state. So I kind of force myself, or sometimes there is doubt in myself. And so I'm trying to figure out things, because I know there's something inside me that there's a pull, but I also doubted recently that whether the pull is real, or how do I improve my practical life, basically, because I realize a lot of things. I get like, since I started reading Sai Satcharit, there were a lot of changes. There were a lot of answers that I got, which were, it was unbelievable for me. And there were a lot of issues that started resolving after that. But recently I'm stuck, like whether it is social life or whether it is finding the peace again, like the touch that I had discovered kind of is losing. And then there's disbelief coming in, and which I realize that, is it true? Whatever I'm thinking or whatever I experienced. And I do believe in religious things as well. Like I do worship gods. I do worship. So the thing is, where am I landing? Like, because I can't improve my social life, or because I am not able to have that peace or the reflection in my personal life, then that is where the figure out phase is having. Because sometimes, like, I didn't have lots of friends, like, since childhood itself, but I like following these practices, but then sometimes I doubt that whatever two of my friends, they aren't in this. Or, you know, I don't feel that peace in social life as well. The touch that I had discovered, it was more peaceful. I like being alone. I realized that. But that also I doubt. Oh, is it a problem? Is it not a good way to feel it or something?
Sure.
So, yeah. So there's doubt, and then there's a swinging.
A lot of doubts. Because you've used the word doubt a lot of times, so there's a lot of doubt. Because that is what the ego does, it doubts. Doubt is one of the ego's favorite pastime. But prior to that, there are just two things I'd like to share. Because you use the word force, I force myself. And you use the word concentration in meditation. Why not look at a different kind of meditation? One in which you have no goal, no concentration, no expectation. You just sit in silence, and even if, as you say, a pain arises, witness it without even wishing it not to be there. Just witness what arises in the moment. No concentration, no goal, no expectation that it should be a good meditation. Because a good meditation already has created a bad meditation, because they are then meditations which are compared. That was a damn good meditation I had. This one, not good meditation. But why not let there be good days of meditation, not so good days of meditation? So be it. That is the will of God. So when we witness this more and more in meditation, we will find that in daily living, this quality of witnessing also starts arising with whatever happens. Because now we are no longer between the good and the bad meditation. We accept that some days are good, some days are not good. We accept that sometimes we are more at peace than others. And we know that we can try to be more at peace, which is what you do. All you can do is try, but now we know the results are in God's hands. So there's no frustration with the trying. So this is the journey of accepting what is, even if that includes trying to improve ourselves, by all means. This teaching is not saying don't even try to improve yourself. Try. But know that all you can do is try, the results are in God's hands. So with this understanding, you will find you are more and more at peace with what is. More and more, by and by. Because it is the understanding which starts operating, not the ego which thinks it has the understanding. That is what is actually happening. Now, if I sit in meditation in the morning and a mosquito comes, there are many mosquitoes here now because of this metro work going on. It's certainly not a good meditation, but I'm okay with it. This meditation was meant to be disturbed by a mosquito. What to do? Can't do much. So, I'm okay. The windows were not shut properly. Next time, I will try my best to ensure that the night before they are shut. That's all I can do. So this starts becoming my approach to life. And then if in some social circles, like you say, my peace cannot be found there, I might avoid them. But I will not judge them. You see, I think I mentioned this in the pandemic in a Zoom talk. One Bollywood star is going through this. Young guy, very hard to be in the social circle in these Bollywood parties and all, because it's all about what he calls superficial stuff and talk and projections and all that. And he is no longer in that zone, but he feels guilty because he says, Gautam, but I have to play the game. So I said, play the game. Play the game. Krishna played the game. Play the game. But do not judge them. Just accept that now your journey is different. You can't relate to what they are saying, the people they are bitching about. He can't relate to all that. But I said, don't be an outcast. Be sensible. This is where your income lies. Play the game. But don't partake in it. He said, no, I don't. If they are criticizing a fellow star, I don't get involved in the criticism because I can't do it anymore. And sometimes the odd comment comes via into saying anything, but I'm managing. So I said, keep managing. You have to row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, merrily, merrily. Life is but a dream. This is the living dream of life. Here today, gone tomorrow. And gone every night when you are in deep sleep. So isn't life but a dream? Every night, you're in deep sleep. Where did it go? Where did this Radhika go who has good meditations and bad meditations and this and that? That story is finished in deep sleep. Isn't that an amazing gift from God? That the most troubled mind, God has given the gift of deep sleep. And as Rameshji would say, what is death but a long deep sleep? You'll be amazed how many therapists and psychologists are drawn to this teaching. Every few months I receive a mail or a call from someone who it really appeals to them, you know. It must be so complementary and close to...
It's parallel.
Yeah, it's quite something.
I would say that, yeah, it's helping me, like this aspect. If I wouldn't have explored to it, there wouldn't have been a better introspection. Like, then as we consider, like, blessing in a disguise, if now I'm not improving, like, it's okay if I'm not a good therapist or something like that right now, where there also a doubt arises, where if I may not have good qualities or... Like, people who are therapists, they have their own issues as well. Because usually people think that psychologists, how can you have your own issues? Your issues should be sorted.
No, and I believe each therapist in their training has to have a therapist they go to. Am I right?
Yeah. So there's a supervision.
Because we are in the human realm.
But people usually think, they forget the human in the psychologist and they're like, you have problems, how can you solve my problems? So yeah, but... considering that this as a best way to self-explore, like to understand myself better, which eventually helps me to understand people better. To the wounded healer, the concept of wounded healer, it actually helps me to empathize with people or understand what they are going through very well.
Beautiful. Because only when one suffers enough, one can relate to another's suffering. According to me, this understanding is the greatest healing, which heals all wounds. Whatever happens is the will of God, and nobody is the doer of their actions. Yes, Dipesh, are you well? Have you lost more weight or your first time? Would you like to share anything? Where are you from?
I am from Gujarat.
Which part?
Anand.
Anand. So you're transiting Mumbai?
Yes. I came here for a doctor's appointment. And meanwhile, 1 or 2 weeks back, I got an email that your talk is there. So I arranged the appointment and also this talk.
But are you familiar with these talks?
Yes, I'm familiar. Actually, I was reading this Eckhart Tolle's book some 3 years back. And after that, I came across your videos also. And then kind of, I was trying, but it was not clicking. This time it happened.
What happened?
Just coming here. Just
everything happens when it is meant to happen and will not happen when it's not meant to happen. So because you had the doctor's appointment, you could come. Is that it?
No. For your talk, I took appointment in such a way that I can have both.
Oh, I see. So a doctor, you met the doctor yesterday?
Yes, yesterday.
Okay. Even I'm a doctor, but I only prescribe peace of mind. The most overlooked, most underrated gift. Do you know that the symbol of doctors, which is, you must have seen those two snakes, and there's a staff in the center, is actually the symbol of, it is called the caduceus of Mercury, but it is the symbol of the awakened Kundalini. The snakes are the Ida and Pingala crossing at the chakras, and the middle is the Sushumna. When the body is in alignment, left and right hemispheres, and the energy is flowing at its supremacy. It's quite a beautiful symbol. Would you like to ask anything, or that's it?
When you say a will of God, isn't that many times we determine this as God's will only after the events have happened? Because before that, we know that everything is uncertain. Several doors are open to us. Several options are open to us. Only after choosing that option, when we know the option that I have chosen is a failure, now it's the will of God.
And I was meant to choose that option, which would be a failure. That too is the will of God.
But as we see that whatever we choose, normally we choose because it arises out of confusion. We don't know what to choose. So we make a choice. Only after making that choice, the good or bad, whatever one goes through, he then concludes that it was the will of God. Before that, he was totally aware that I am going to choose this because I have a motive to achieve something in future.
Yes, but the man of understanding knows that even that choice he is going to make hereafter is precisely that choice which he is meant to make. So he is already freed of this burden because he knows that I will choose based on what my intellect tells me to choose between the two, and my intellect God created.
So whatever I choose, even that choosing is based on my conditioning.
Absolutely.
So you mean that even the conditioning is the will of God?
Yes. What is not the will of God, tell me. Because if there's something which is not the will of God, that means there's a power bigger than God. Yet, the man of understanding knows that daily living means making a choice. Should I have a coffee now after satsang or should I have a cup of tea? Choice. But whether he gets a coffee or gets a tea, he knows is God's will. Tea leaves might be over. We don't know.
Isn't this a kind of escape, or we are escaping from the responsibility what we have taken?
No, the escape would be if I decided not to make a choice. But I know I have to make a choice because that is the dynamic in daily living. I have to choose. Where is the escape? I am prepared to face the consequences of my action. But deep down, I know it is not truly my action. So, I am at peace with the consequences. The man of wisdom is at peace with the outcome because he knows using my intellect a choice was made, but deep down I know it is not my intellect and not my choice. So I'm at peace. It is, in fact, a most beautiful way of living.
Even not making a choice is a choice.
Depends. Because even not making a choice can have doership behind it. I am not making a choice is doership. But if there are two options before you and you feel that at this stage the best possible step to take is not to make a choice and let events unfold, then why not? But that I will not make a choice, is there doership in that?
Deep down within, somewhere, subtly, we do have a conflict that it was, if the ball is in my court, then definitely that was God's will. If the ball is not in my court, of course I will blame, it was God's will.
But deep down, the man of understanding doesn't have that conflict. But make no mistake, everyone, the person without understanding, the person with understanding, in daily living must make choices. The difference is that if my choice results in a great outcome, for the sage, pleasure will arise. Why not? He's a human being. But no pride, not my action. So the pleasure which arises is just pure pleasure, joy, but not pride. And if the result is, as you say, a failure, regret may arise. My God, regret may arise in a sage also. But no guilt or shame. Why? Not my action. I chose that what I was meant to choose. So the sage is not a zombie. There will be pleasures, pains and so on, but those don't convert because of the my of the ego into pride and arrogance or guilt and shame. Whereas the ordinary person is consumed with guilt and shame for what they think is their action. That the sage does not go through. There's a talk in Pune next weekend, if anyone knows people who are following the teaching in Pune, you're welcome to inform them.